The next case on our docket today is Richard David Morrow versus Robert LeGrand, Warden Lovelock Correctional Center et al., case number 68768. Mr. Bustos, you're ready to go.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Justin Bustos. I represent appellant Richard Morrow. This case was brought to challenge the district court's decision to deny Mr. Morrow's petition for writ of mandamus. The simple purpose of this appeal is to allow Mr. Morrow to review his records that are maintained by the Nevada Department of Corrections. Indeed, Mr. Morrow is allowed to review these records pursuant either to the Nevada Public Records Act or Chapter 179A of the Nevada Revised Statutes. Now, the primary basis we brought this appeal is that the Nevada NPRA specifically allows Mr. Morrow to review these records. The district court, in its order, concluded in one sentence, without any analysis, that the records in this case were not public books and records. We submit to the court that decision was clearly erroneous. And this court can apply the framework it has established for determining claims of confidentiality to determine that that is the case here. Specifically, whenever the court is looking at an NPRA issue, it starts with the presumption that all government-generated books and records are public records subject to disclosure. In this case, there really is no dispute that NDOC is a government agency. It's created by Chapter 209 of the Nevada Revised Statutes, and it is governed by the Board of Prisons. The head of the Board of Prisons is the governor. The Secretary of State is the secretary of that board. This is a government agency. Because of that, NDOC had the burden of proving, by preponderance of the evidence, that some of the records at issue in this case were confidential. NDOC completely failed to meet that burden. In fact, NDOC has never described why each and every record that was withheld is privileged and which privilege are excluded confidential and why it's confidential. Indeed, it's important when we look at...
Mr. Bustos, could you answer a question for me before we get into that analysis? Does AR-56802... qualify as an appropriate exception to the open records statute itself in Chapter 239?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. So the legal authority for the NDOC enacting AR-568 is NRS 179A.150. And that statute gives NDOC the authority to enact regulations that govern the review of records of criminal history to determine their accuracy. There is nothing in that statute that gives NDOC the authority to actually declare that certain records are confidential. So that's reason number one. The second reason is that AR-568 expressly contradicts NRS 150. That statute provides that if it's a record of criminal history, the inmate who is the subject of that record of criminal history is absolutely allowed to review that record. And then in section 070, it defines what exactly is a record of criminal history. Now, AR-568 then purports to restrict what the legislature has already determined is a record of criminal history. You can't have an administrative regulation that contradicts the statute it is intended to enact. And then finally, there's a third reason AR-568 doesn't apply, Your Honor. AR-568 only applies if it's a record of criminal history. That's because the enacting statute only deals with review of records of criminal history. Now, both the district court in this case and NDOC concluded that the records here are not records of criminal history. So if it's not a record of criminal history, AR-568 then can't be used as a basis to exclude it.
Well, it does seem like the contents of the iFile has records in it that might be outside the scope of the definition of a record of criminal history. Would you agree with that?
It's possible.
Based on the description of what is included in this iFile.
It's possible, Your Honor. But when we're talking about records of criminal history, this court ruled in Donray of Nevada that if a record is defined as outside the scope of a record of criminal history, that does not make that record confidential. And the reason it doesn't make the record confidential is because NRS 179A.070 does not define it expressly as confidential. So really, when the district court relied on 179A.070, it really has no basis to exclude Morrow from reviewing his own records. he's either entitled to review the records because they are records of criminal history, or if they're not records of criminal history, we know this court has already concluded that 179A070 does not make those documents confidential. So the NDOC would still have to rely on a specific statutory provision to say those records are confidential or to engage in the balancing test.
Well, wouldn't the department have the ability to enact a regulation that confirms a defendant's right to look at their iFile to make corrections, which is what appears to be the case in subsection 01?
Oh, absolutely they have that right, Your Honor, but the statutory authority given to them doesn't give them the right to restrict or declare what documents are confidential. That would run contrary to the purpose of the NPRA and to the definition of what is a record of criminal history.
Mm-hmm. So your position is that, just to be clear here, the provisions in 568.02 are invalid. That regulation is invalid. It's not consistent with its enacting statute.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
For the reasons I stated.
Okay. One other issue then that I wanted to raise with you. The district court appears to have largely disposed of this matter by saying that a writ wasn't an appropriate procedure to undertake a review of this dispute. If this court were to disagree with the district court's analysis, should this matter be remanded either to the district court or to the department to conduct a Don Ray analysis for records that are outside the definition of criminal history record?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor. And the reason is because NDOC had the burden at the district court level to show that each document is confidential and to explain why it's confidential. Mm-hmm. They failed to meet that burden. In DR Partners, that case involved cell phone records of public officials. And in that case, public agency also did not present the court with any evidence showing why these records should be confidential, why there's a danger to them. And because of that, the court remanded it to the district court with instructions to grant the writ of mandamus. So our position is NDOC had that opportunity. They failed to meet their burden. And as in any case, if you fail to meet your burden, that means you lose the case.
So in your view, the disposition of the case by this panel, if we shared your views about the analysis, would be to direct the district court to enter the writ and require the production of all records.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Are there some records, though, that make up the iFile that are protected by other statutory provisions? There seem to be some... just call them psychosexual or psychology reports that may not be or may be protected by other provisions in the statute.
So I will address your question in two parts, Your Honor. The only record that we can tell based on the vague description given by NDOC that might qualify as a privilege is the parole and probation violation report. Mm-hmm. That arguably could be within the scope of NRS 213.1075, but we don't entirely know because we're not really sure what that is based on the description. With respect to the second part of your question on the mental health record, Your Honor, that relates to section 169A.165, and that makes the records in section 163 confidential. Well, when you look at section 163, Your Honor, that deals entirely with records that are transmitted pursuant to other statutes to the central repository. Here, Mr. Morrow has never requested documents from the central repository. We don't even know if those three mental health reports cited by the NDOC are the types of reports that went to the central repository. There is no evidence presented on that. And then when you look at section 163 and the statutes it refers to for the documents that are sent to the central repository, none of those issues appear to be here in this case. I'll give the court a couple examples here. So NRS, subsection 163, refers to the appointment of a guardian of a person with a mental defect. It refers to pleas of guilty but mentally ill. It refers to a finding of guilty but mentally ill. Acquittal by reason of insanity, the procedure for finding a defendant incompetent, or finding a mental illness for purposes of involuntary commitment. That's what subsection 163.1 refers to. None of the titles of the documents in this case appear to be that document that's sent to the central repository. And then the second point on the mental health records, Your Honor, is all the statute, this whole statutory scheme with the mental health records refers entirely to documents transmitted to the central repository. But then, if you look at another section within that same scheme, 167, that says that the person who is actually subject to that mental health record is entitled to review that record. So our position is that it's inappropriate for the district court in NDOC to rely upon a statute that says documents transmitted to the central repository are confidential, but then ignore the statute of the same scheme that says the person who is subject to those records can review them at the central repository. Either that statutory scheme applies or it doesn't. You can't piecemeal it to, on the one hand, say we're not going to give you records, and on the other hand, say you can't review your own records. It's part of the same statutory scheme.
Okay. Did you want to reserve any time, Mr. Bustos?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Then I will reserve the rest of your time.
Thank you, Your Honors. Joseph Tartakovsky for the State of Nevada. May it please the Court. I think I can simplify this case from what the briefing suggested with its dizzying array of statutes. The crucial fact in this case is what an I-file is. It's a document that NDOC keeps on every inmate. It's hundreds of pages, sometimes thousands of pages. It contains prison guards, concerns about inmates sent to their superiors, psychological evaluations, list of prison enemies. It is, without exaggeration, one of the most sensitive documents this state keeps on its citizens. Even internal NDOC staff cannot access this except on a need-to-know basis. What's extraordinary about Mr. Marr's argument is it gives no recognition to the fact that if their legal theory was right, that an I-file is a public record or accessible as a record for criminal history under Chapter 179, it would be available not only to Mr. Marr, but the rest of the world. Journalists, you, me, his prison enemies, and that would undermine the NDOC as quickly as making this court's internal memos and clerk research public records. Mr. Marr doesn't like the parole board. This is his fifth case before this court in 7 years. And this is his newest theory, but it will fail, and I'll explain why. But one just quick point, which is he did get his I-file, most of it, probably 95% of the hundreds of pages. Eight documents were withheld, some of them were redacted, but he didn't get them under the Public Records Act or as part of a Public Records Act request that he made. He got them under this very specific rule, AR 568, that allows inmates under certain conditions and restrictions to review their own record for certain purposes. The Public Records Act inquiry is very simple. Government documents are presumptively public unless they are declared by law to be confidential. The law declares I-files confidential in a number of places, but I think the clearest example is AR 569. It's an administrative regulation called confidentiality of inmate records. It says very clearly that files containing inmate records are not a public record and confidential unless the NDOC says otherwise. The NDOC is empowered to create these regulations under statute. There's actually a statute that says that NDOC books and records are confidential, except to certain government officials.
Mr. Tartakovsky?
209-251, yeah.
Do you believe the state made a sufficient showing under 568.02, if we operate under those administrative regulations, that those eight documents fell into one of these exceptions? Because that's one of the concerns raised, is it was just this blanket, you know, 0.02, and so you don't get to see these records.
Yes, Your Honor, we did all that the law requires and more. The PRA law, and I hasten to add that this was under prison review. It wasn't a PRA thing here at this point. PRA says you got to itemize the documents. We did that. You got to state the legal basis for withholding them. We did that. AR 568 and 569. It's in the Rutherford Declaration. That should end the PRA inquiry. Certain cases, the purpose of the log is to tip off the other side, the requesting party, but whether the basis for withholding it is proper. So in a case like Reno Newspapers versus Givens, that can be very important because you're talking about 100 emails from Governor Givens. So depending on who they were sent to, who they're from, the contents, they could be privileged or not. The only document at issue here is the I-file. The iFile is categorically declared confidential to the entire world, including even to many NDOC staffers. So there should be no, for instance, in Gibbons, I think the crucial sentence is that we typically require a privilege log unless it's not necessary, because there can be no doubt about what the basis of withholding is. There's no concern that they may have a claim or they may not, depending on the contents. iFiles are out as a matter of public record, as a PRA matter. The only...
And just under the regulations, your own regulations.
Yes.
You believe the state sufficiently, not PRA, but under your own regulations, sufficiently showed why each document fell under 568.02, like why he needed to be protected or could not see his own psychological evaluation, for instance, just as one example.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the three psychological, they're all part of, as they state, two of them, psych review panel. This is a panel of psychologists that when an inmate comes in at various periods, they examine the inmate. This is not treating him as a patient for his benefit. This is a proprietary document that allows the prison to assess whether he's high risk, low risk, who he should be housed with, to know who they're dealing with on a matter of 24-hour. Inmates never get psych review panel documents.
Okay, which exception does it fall under? Does it endanger other persons? Does it endanger the security of the institution? Does it disclose someone else's confidential information? Or does it impede, hinder, or compromise an investigation? Just looking at your regulation.
It could be any of those or all of those. Most likely, I think they keep these from them because these are assessments of their mental state. It might be upsetting for them to see.
But are these assessments the parole board is going to rely upon in denying parole or granting parole?
Maybe or maybe not. Parole board can rely on anything it wants. I'd like to take a position here that the prison's determination as to what falls under these exceptions or not, I think, as far as I can tell, is essentially unreviewable. That is, unless he has a claim that this AR or these exceptions are inconsistent with some statute or some constitutional provision, they're challenging facially this. This is within the discretion of these caseworkers to decide what he should get and what he should not. Again, he doesn't have a right to get these iFiles. Nobody has a right to get these iFiles. The prison has created a limited right of access for prisoners to verify the accuracy of certain non-confidential parts of that, and even files within there that might not be confidential. They can still withhold it for whatever reason. For instance, the prison NDOC gets letters from victims saying, I understand this inmate's not for parole, he ruined my life, please take that into account. The inmate usually can't see that. The FBI will send something quite frequently to say, let us know if you're releasing this person, he's under investigation for a similar crime in Idaho. That's an open investigation that goes into that file. It's highly sensitive. The only thing that a requesting party should need to know, and for purposes of this case, is this declared confidential by law? That's what the PRA says. If it is declared confidential by law, it's not a public record and not accessible.
Your source for that is NRS 209-251.
For that statement I just made?
Yeah.
The state NRS 239-010.
No, I'm sorry.
Public record.
I didn't phrase that question very well. Your source for declaring the iFile confidential, as I understand it, follows this approach. NRS 209.251 keeps the books and records of the Nevada Department of Corrections confidential. And under that statute, AR 568, 1 and 2 have been enacted. Is that your contention?
No, my contention is that the specific law, the regulation is law, that declares this confidential squarely is AR 569. AR 569 was enacted under the authority of the statute you referenced, the 209-251, books and papers for certain officials, but also NRS 209.131, which is the statute that empowers NDOC to create administrative regulations in the first place. AR 658, which was largely the focus of the discussion in the court below, because that's how Mr. Morrow framed his challenge as them not complying with 568.
Is there anything in the PRA statute that empowers the Department of Corrections to declare records confidential by regulation?
The NPRA says that public records are open unless declared by law to be confidential. The PRA uses the phrase by law 7 times. It also uses the phrase by statute once to refer to the county recorder so they know the difference. When you withhold records, you have to give the basis and the reason, the legal basis. We know that regulations, we know that PRA does not only require a statutory exemption or withholding for a number of reasons. This court declared in the Citizens for Civil Rights, Seniors for Civil Rights, in 2013 that a court rule enacted pursuant to statute for mortgage foreclosure documents was could declare something confidential. That wasn't a statute. There's bases of law that could declare something confidential, like Constitution or U.S. Constitution or federal law that may make it declared.
Well, isn't that primarily a fact with 213-1075 regarding parole and probation violation report? That's confidential pursuant to statute.
That particular one is.
Right. Just,
statutes aren't the only basis for declaring something confidential. It's law, and as long as an administrative regulation is law and has the force of law, which it certainly does, then that is that means iFiles are confidential and cannot be accessed by a PRA. Now, records of criminal history, I don't know if the court's interested in that. That's a winding statute, but records of criminal history just means what you colloquially call a rap sheet, this sort of central collisions between the individual and the criminal justice system. So capture that phrase, formal transactions. You can get an indictment, but not the confidential informant information underlying it. You can get a jury verdict, but not the trial transcript. The central repository does not have iFiles. We know that because the statute sets out what the NDOC has to give the central repository. They don't have it. Now, the statute they cite, this 179-100, you can get limited records from a criminal justice agency, which the NDOC is one. And it says you can get convictions or incidents pertaining to which they're incarcerated, like parole and probation. So this is an even more limited subset of records of criminal history. So this is basic stuff, conviction, parole. It does not include the iFile.
Go ahead. I was just going to ask you, just for a point of clarification, my understanding is the state was relying upon 179A, 165, and 179A, 163 in declaring many of these documents confidential. Is that correct?
I think there's a little confusion on this point. So that once the 165 and 167, it talks about mental health records. What it means is incompetent pleas and insanity pleas. So
but doesn't that basically pivot around what is transmitted to the National Institute of Criminal Background Check System, and what evidence in this record indicates that anything pertains to that? Did you offer any evidence that the withheld documents constitute those types of records?
They don't, because we have the list of documents. Those rules you cite apply to mental health issues that come up in a criminal proceeding. Incompetent pleas, mental health pleas, those aren't an issue in this case. Not to mention that these statutes weren't raised below, which is one reason why the district court didn't rely on them. I think I'd like to urge the court is to not superimpose the Public Records Act rubric on this prison regulation. He brought this case below as a sort of attack on the prison regulation, glancing at the PRA. Only on appeal has it become a full-throated PRA request, which is, as my friend had just said, his position is that the entire iFile is a public record. So anyone in the world can just get it on request, which would be devastating and very hard to imagine for NDOC officials. So if his challenge is that the prison didn't apply its own rules, then that's a very different thing, and that's why we talked about declaratory judgment. Our position on mandamus, of course, a PRA request, a proper PRA case, you bring it on mandamus. We're not disputing that. Everyone knows that. It's that his this wasn't a PRA thing below when he was pro per. It was a sort of mixed challenge to this application of AR 568. In other words, he's bringing it to force the prison to comply with their own regulations. But it really seemed that he was attacking the basis, he was attacking the withholding of it in the first place. That they, the prison has no power to withhold this under the PRA. And so that's why the, that's why we're talking about that he has an adequate remedy under law. If it's a pure mandamus thing, sure, but it has to be rejected because this is a confidential.
Did he attack the constitutionality of AR 568 below?
No. I think the biggest suggestion was that it was sort of inconsistent with statute, but it's not because the PRA lets agencies of government declare things confidential, as happened here.
So what would be his plain, speedy, adequate remedy at law? If he wasn't attacking the constitutionality of that.
If his claim is that the PRA, if that this AR is inconsistent with the PRA, notwithstanding all the statutory authority that allows them to create these exceptions, then he could seek a declaratory, he could seek declaratory relief that these ARs are superseded or rendered infirm by the PRA itself. I mean, 239.010. Unless there are any further questions?
Just briefly, so it's your position that the documents that were withheld, that Mr. Morrow is seeking, were withheld because they're confidential, not because they fall under AR 568.02, just because he doesn't get to have them.
So for purposes of PR, for the purposes of the Public Records Act, every single page in an iFile is confidential. For purposes of 568, which is well outside the rubric, but he himself, for certain purposes, can get it. These were withheld under those exceptions in 568.
So you withheld, the state withheld the documents under 568.02. Is that correct?
Yeah, in response to his 568 request to get them, but not in respect to some any kind of Public Records Act. But he had gone to the Public Records Act agent at the prison and said, I want this record. She would have dismissed it out of hand. She never gives up iFiles. She doesn't have access to iFiles. It was only in this prison context that he even had a chance to peek at them.
So in denying it in the prison context, did the state delineate which of the exceptions under 568.02 applied to each document?
These exceptions allow the caseworker in his or her discretion to withhold them. They withheld certain documents and said these are the ones. If you mean, did they... to applicate, like the drawing the lines between the subject?
No, when we review it, how do we know which of these was relied upon in denying the document? We don't, do we?
You mean those A, B, C, and D?
I mean, yeah, 1, 2, 3, and 4 should I have, 0.02.
We can offer guesses. I mean, okay. It's mental health. Usually it's not healthy for the inmate to see it. But again, I don't know what rule would require them to do that, to say that we have to do this. It's not part of the procedure that the caseworker, it wouldn't have been within the caseworker's power or procedure to do that. Only when it becomes a PRA does the privilege law concept come into play.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Your
Honor. Just to follow up on that point, you did release to Mr. Morrow a number of documents.
Right.
What if in doing so, a mistake was made? Document that was withheld, even apparently under the warden's view, could still be or should have been released because these other documents were. How would anybody ever find out? How would anybody ever test that? Apparently, your position is that that decision, even if it's wrong, even if it's mistaken, is completely unreviewable.
Yes, but that doesn't seem all that different from the hundreds of decisions that are made in the prison every day about who you house people with, what time, when people take their medicine, how they eat.
It kind of makes your regulation a little illusory. You get to look at the documents and make corrections to them, except for these four or five categories. But it really doesn't matter, because we don't have to give you this stuff in the first place. Is that the position of the prison?
Well, take the facts of this case. I mean, we know that his iFile must have been in the hundreds of pages, given how long. He got the entire thing, except for this very selective withdrawal of a few documents that have to do with mental health, some of these are emails between senior prison officials, classification changes. I mean, this is sensitive prison management information.
We don't know that. We don't know what's in there. You do, apparently.
No, I have the same list you have. I'm just going by the titles that were disclosed to him in the mandamus proceeding. I haven't looked at the documents at all. But but prisons are prisons. I mean, right of access information is very curtailed in the prison context, just like freedom of movement, freedom of speech, freedom against searches and seizures, because they're very serious safety and security. No, there's no evidence that he was being stonewalled or that anything improper. His position was not that we... His position is that he gets full bore access to this entire IFAW as a matter of public record. That's the issue before this court. Are our IFAW's public records? Now, if the proceeding had been different, if this was an issue where he's saying that there's some bad faith going on, or that that would be a different thing. But these seem to be the sort of classic documents you'd be withholding. FBI reports. I mean, these could be active investigations that he's not privy to, and that's not even NDOC's information in the first place.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Bustos, you have a little over 4 minutes. Over 4 minutes.
NDOC's position is that its determination of what's confidential is unreviewable. That's reminiscent of President Trump's position before the Ninth Circuit that an immigration ban is unreviewable. Of course, the Ninth Circuit promptly rejected that, and this court should too. The NPRA has the presumption of public access to records. Exceptions to the NPRA are narrowly construed. Now, it's a little unclear. I'm not entirely sure what NDOC's position is now as to why the documents are withheld, but what I seem to be hearing is that it's based on its administrative regulations. It would be contrary to this state's statutory scheme to allow a government agency to enact regulations that essentially says we're going to declare all of our records to be confidential. And the reason for that is because all exceptions to the NPRA are narrowly construed. And so it would fly in the face of this court's entire jurisprudence to allow a government agency to simply enact a regulation without specific statutory authority saying it has that authority to grant such regulations.
But counsel, this is why I asked counsel what the authority was for the enactment of these regulations. I understood him to say that that authority rested in statutory provisions that protect books and records of the prison, 209, 251, for example, if I wrote that down correctly. What about the statutory provision that makes the books and records of the Department of Corrections confidential? Couldn't the department then enact regulations that implement what books are we talking about, what records we're talking about, and the like?
Well, this is the first time that NDOC has ever cited that statute as a basis to enact a regulation. Below, the only administrative regulation that was cited, as Justice Stiglitz pointed out, was NRS 568. 569 was never provided at the prison level as a basis to deny the records. It wasn't relied upon in the district court level. It wasn't relied upon by the district court in denying it. So I haven't specifically reviewed NRS 209.251 in connection with this argument, as it simply wasn't within the scope of this case before today. But I would still submit that whatever authority they have, as this court's jurisprudence says, has to be narrowly construed. And in cases where you don't have a specific statute that says this document is rendered confidential as a matter of law, this court has traditionally applied the balancing test, where it's the government agency's obligation to show that its interest in non-disclosure clearly outweighs the public's interest in access.
But that's arguing also the Public Records Act, which, and is it accurate that that wasn't discussed below?
I'm sorry, NDOC did raise the issue below that it had the interest in withholding records, but there is no evidence ever presented as to what interest was implicated or why.
Right, but you're arguing up here that the Public Records Act allows you access to these records.
I apologize, I misunderstood your question. Yes, the NPRA was expressly raised below. It was Mr. Morrow, when he requested his records, requested as both a record of his criminal history and a record of under the Public Records Act. So it's been throughout this case that he's relied upon both authorities as a basis for his records.
Do you have that record site?
Unfortunately, I don't, Your Honor, but I'd be happy to submit it supplemental.
Could you submit that to the... I'm looking for Mr. Morrow's record request.
I will do that, Your Honor.
Thanks.
And the last thing I will point out with the time left is NDOC to this day still cannot point out which basis it withheld each record. We heard argument that FBI reports, you know, should obviously be excluded. But importantly, we don't even know if Mr. Mora's iFile had an FBI report. The declaration of Dale Rutherford just said if this information was in there, it would have been removed. But there's never an affirmative statement that any of these documents actually existed or removed. And that's the problem. We don't know the dates of the documents that were removed. We don't know the contents of it. The emails. All we know is the names of the emails and the dates. We don't know generally what it even involved. So in order to test the claim that these documents are confidential, NDOC just completely failed to meet its burden of showing that these fall within administrative regulations or any specific statute. And so for that reason, we'd ask that this case be remanded with instructions that the writ petition be granted.
Okay, are there any other questions for Mr. Bustos? Apparently not, Mr. Bustos. Thank you very much for your argument. Forgive me for the mispronunciation of your last name, Mr. Tarkovsky. I apologize if I messed that up. I don't mean to. Thank you both for your excellent arguments today, and we appreciate the input. There may be reasons to request additional briefing in this matter. The panel will have to confer, so I'm not going to declare this submitted as yet.